You ready, Mace?
Party people in the place to be. Uh-huh. It's about that time for us to
Yeah. Good morning. Welcome into 104.5 The Zone. Hope you're off to a great start today. Thanks for hanging out with us. We have a lot of ground to cover, not a lot of time to do it. Just 3 hours is how much time Lucas and I have to spend with you, so let's not waste any time. Vols, Sweet 16, the big game against FAU later this evening. Bob Kessling, voice of the Vols, will join us in 15 minutes from now. We got some local hoops to talk about, too. Vandy's season ended last night just short of the NIT semifinals. And that's the second straight season under Jerry Stackhouse that they've done so. So last night at Memorial Gym, 67-59, they fell to UAB, and that's how the season ended. So pretty tightly contested. Lucas, how much of the game did you watch? Good morning, by the way.
Good morning. I caught the entire second half. I got home as the second half was starting, and it felt like there was the largest deficit for either team was 3 points until the final two or so minutes. Good game.
It was a good game. Vandy got back in the game late, had a couple of big shots. Turnovers, ultimately the thing that kind of damned them, though. They were the UAB went 17 of 17 from the free throw line and not able to advance past the quarterfinals are the Commodores. So with all that being said, and we're going to have a larger conversation today about Rick Barnes and kind of what a win in the Sweet 16 would do for his legacy, specifically at Tennessee. Not, you know, not previous stops, everything that's happened since he's been at Knoxville, and how consistently good, particularly in the regular season, but now having a little more postseason success, how good the Vols have been under Rick Barnes. We're going to have a kind of a legacy conversation and do a little bit of that with Bob here in just a bit. But for Vandy and Jerry Stackhouse, this was an unexpected swing in their season where Jerry Stackhouse ultimately ends up winning co-SEC Coach of the Year after the way that the Commodores are able to rebound and falling short in the conference tournament, not making the NCAA tournament, being disappointed by it. And I think most people who looked around and saw the way that Vandy was playing down the stretch said, yeah, that should probably be an NCAA tournament team. And, you know, snubs, whatever, however you want to consider it. Do we consider Vanderbilt basketball season a success under Jerry Stackhouse? Because I went from talking about should they be keeping this dude, I don't know, I would say 6 to 8 weeks in, and understanding that he had just very recently received a contract extension and that those details aren't made public because Vandy doesn't have to do that kind of stuff. So with all that being said, how Stackhouse and this team finished playing some form of postseason basketball, probably not the postseason basketball that they deserve to be playing in, no matter how that would have gone had they made the field. For them to consistently be able to kind of find their footing, particularly this season, I think it's a credit. I think it's a successful season for Vandy this year.
Context is important when you think about success, right? It doesn't have to be NCAA tournament or bust. If you don't make it, it's a failure. If you do, it's a successful season.
No, but you also don't want to downplay the significance of that. Like, this is a basketball program with tradition.
They should expect to be in the tournament.
Right, and whose fan base has higher expectations of them than most Vanderbilt athletic programs do outside of baseball. They've had success in other sports, obviously, but like Vanderbilt basketball means something to people, and for it to kind of have fallen by the wayside, and certainly with a lack of care. I mean, the Bryce Drew thing was an abomination unto itself, but like Jerry Stackhouse, this can't be good enough. It has to be a sign of progress. Now, ultimately their season ends the same way that it did last year. And this is not a small sample size of Vandy under Jerry Stackhouse. At this point, do we think there's evidence, though, that they're improving?
I think
is the thing that I'm looking for here.
And recent history kind of can constitute what success is, no matter what the expectation of the program is as a whole. Like Tennessee football over the years. Tennessee football in the big picture, 8 wins, 9 wins, including the bowl game, is not the goal, right? But in year three of Butch Jones, that was a success. 8-4 with a bowl win over Northwestern in the Outback Bowl was a success, especially considering what was coming down the pipe, and it was a step forward. 2016 was not a success because the expectation was much different. I don't know that the expectation for Vanderbilt was to finish with 11 wins in the SEC and 22 wins in the regular season and beat Kentucky at Rupp Arena and beat them in the tournament and beat Tennessee. That wasn't the expectation. So, yeah, I think it should be a success. Can you tell me the last time Vanderbilt finished with a winning record in league play? Just take a guess. I don't expect you to know off the top of your head, but just take a guess.
I mean, is it okay? Can I ask a question for a hint?
Yeah, yeah.
Was it Kevin Stallings?
No, it was year one of Bryce Drew.
Year one of Bryce Drew.
2016-17 season,
and they were in conference.
In conference play, they had 10 wins.
Okay.
So the last time Vanderbilt had 20 or more wins in a regular season was the 2014-15 season. That was under Kevin Stallings.
Yeah.
That was his second to last year.
22-15 is how Vandy ultimately finishes. And, you know, it was uncharacteristic if you watched any of that game. Kind of what would you say has been Vanderbilt's identity in this late season stretch where they've kind of figured things out? I would say it's been that they've been playing coherent and cohesive offense. Like, that's been the kind of thing that I felt like defined them down the stretch. Now, that wasn't obviously the case last night against UAB. It was a bit of a struggle, as Lucas pointed out, tightly contested. But Vanderbilt felt like it was laboring more than we had seen them as of late.
UAB is a good team, by the way. A well-coached team with Andy Kennedy.
Oh, Andy. I didn't even realize Andy Kennedy's UAB's coach. When did he stop doing TV? How recent is that?
I think he's on year three at UAB, something like that.
Not important. Either way, I really do think it was a successful season for Vanderbilt. We don't talk about them nearly enough, and there's not a ton of reason to, but they earned every opportunity that they got at the end of the season the way that they were able to finish, and it was a shame to not see them in the NCAA tournament, full stop. Now, where Jerry Stackhouse goes from here, that continues to be the question, and how much of that, you know, how much scrutiny is going to continue to be drawn on them, because I like that they have expectations. I like the idea of coming into next basketball season with the expectation that both Vanderbilt and Tennessee should be able to achieve some level of meaningful competitiveness that makes these games matter more, especially locally, man. Like, Memorial Gym is such a fun place when they've got something going. Memorial Magic, it's an actual thing. So, like, To see the way that it had tailed off a little bit, I didn't mean to interrupt your point, because it does matter the way that they were able to pull it together this season. But I want there to be the raised expectation for Vanderbilt basketball as a program to kind of look around and say, okay, but it's still the same finish as last year. Show me more.
Oh, that should be the expectation next season, right? Make the tournament.
Sure as hell.
I don't know that you can consider next season a success if Vanderbilt doesn't get in with how this season ended.
I don't want to have to keep lowering my bar.
Yeah.
I guess is the way that I look at these things, but either way.
But you got to get some guys. And Stackhouse, other coaches rave about Jerry Stackhouse. I mean, they talk about the sets coming out of timeouts, his ability offensively coaching his team. Other coaches love Jerry Stackhouse, co-coach of the year.
Yeah.
But they don't have enough talent there right now, and that's another huge part of his job.
So we've got a lot of college basketball today and tomorrow. Obviously, the Sweet 16 getting ready to get underway. You've got FAU and Tennessee, Madison Square Garden tonight, 8 p.m. Central Time on TBS, and of course on the Vol Network is where you can hear that. Voice of the Bob, Voice of the Vols, not Voice of the Bob.
Voice of the Vob.
Voice of the Vob. What's Mike Keith's acronym?
The Vot? Yeah. The Vav.
I don't like that. I hate that we did it at the same time. We're spending entirely too much time around each other. But basketball, it's exciting. It's going to be electric. I hope it's going to be at least a little better offensively. Either way, voice of the Vols, Bob Kessling, will join us coming up next.
Let's see. Something different for dinner. Searching restaurants near me.
Right here, ma'am. How can we help?
Gee, same old, same old.
Wait, we're right here, ma'am. Our restaurant's just a few blocks from you. Why is she not seeing us?
Back to the usual, I guess.
Ma'am, can you not see us?
Nope, they can't see you. Because you're buried deep in the list of local restaurants. You are invisible online. Introducing Cumulus Boost. Get a boost, get found, get on the map. Learn more at cumulusboost.com.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.
Please tell people what you just said in my ear. I asked you, where the hell's the Rocky Top? It's game day, baby. We got Voice of the Vols, Bob Kessling on. Vols are in the Sweet 16, Madison Square Garden. What did you just say to me in my ears? We're coming back.
It's a little gauche.
What does that even mean?
I don't know what that means. I saw that word on a TV show the other day, and I like it. But life's been good. It's coming back to Joe Walsh. Life's been good for the Vols in the Sweet 16 for the second time in the Rick Barnes era. The vibes are good in New York.
I'm so mad at you. Bob Kessling is here with us on 104.5 The Zone. Bob, I tried. He's trying to bring down the vibes just because he's lazy. I don't know what's happening back there. Do you know what gauche means?
Not exactly. I don't think I need to know what that means. We're good.
It is, according to Merriam-Webster, lacking social experience or grace, which describes me perfectly.
You have no idea what you're doing back there.
Never have.
I'm supposed to be the pretentious one, even if we don't know what we're talking about. Anyway, Bob's here because there's basketball on tonight. Vol Network pregame, 7:30 Central Time is where you can hear it. Bob, I mean, how much fun are you having? How excited are you?
Well, I think anytime you get this deep in the tournament, it's always fun. You never take it for granted because, you know, we've had teams that have been bounced out in the first round. So when you get this far and you can kind of see the final four in the distance, it's really exciting. And Tennessee's got a pretty good path to the final four. Purdue, of course, gets knocked out, the number one seed. Now Tennessee goes up against Florida Atlantic. This is a very interesting matchup tonight. Florida Atlantic's kind of like a small-sized Alabama team. They play really fast, but they either shoot threes or they try and shoot layups. They've got a big guy in the middle. They've got a seven-footer, but the rest of the guys are 6'4 and under. So they play fast. They want to shoot a lot of threes. They've got six guys on their team that have shot over 100 three-pointers this year, and one is at 93. So that tells you they want to put up three-point shots, and they want to play fast. And so what they'll try and do is get down the floor before Tennessee can set up its defense and hopefully get a shot off before Tennessee locks in on them. And Tennessee is going to have a really decided height advantage in this game. And so you would expect Tennessee to try and pound it inside to Plavšić and Olivier Comois and take advantage of that, and Julian Phillips take advantage of that size. So I think it's going to be a really interesting chess match tonight to see which team can get their offense going. The Florida Atlantic team would like to see it being a free-flowing game where their guys can run around and shoot. And Tennessee, like they did against Duke, like they're saying, they want to drag them into the mud and slow them down. So we'll see which one wins out tonight.
Well, not lost on, I think, anybody at all. Bob Kessling, Voice of the Vols, here with us on 104.5 The Zone. Tennessee and FAU tonight. Right here on 104.5 The Zone, the Vol Network. With what you heard at the podium from the FAU coach about, you know, watching Australian rules rugby, and then you had one of the players talking about, you know, does Tennessee play a little dirty? And you got all the hand wringing. Like, Bob, it's like nobody's watched Tennessee all year long and then were shocked when they tried to come out and mug Duke that way.
Well, it's like nobody's ever watched a Rick Barnes team. Right. I mean, that's the way Rick Barnes teams have played for 36 years. So he wants to be physical. He wants to be tough. You know, the interesting thing that's when you go back to the Duke game, you know that there were more fouls called on Duke than there were Tennessee in the game. Tennessee only had 11 fouls called on them. in the game. Duke had 17. But, you know, Tennessee just came out and they figured out how the officials were going to call the game, and that's how they played. And the more they could grab and push and be physical, the more they were going to do it. You kind of got the feeling early when Uroš Plavšić threw that elbow into Filipowski and sent him into the basket support, and they didn't call anything. I mean, they called a foul, but it wasn't flagrant. Then you knew what they're going to let him play. And that's one thing, too. I talked to Coach Barnes about this yesterday on ball calls. These are officials that you know, most of the time when you get in conference play, you know which guys you've got, the officials. But you get in the tournament, and they kind of have different officials. You might have seen them in the holiday tournament or in a non-conference game, but you haven't seen them consistently. And so now you get in this game, and you've got to figure out how they're going to call it. And Coach Barnes said it usually takes about, you know, till the first media timeout to see if they're going to be tight or if they're going to let you play. And but you have to make those adjustments, and that's also kind of the beauty of this tournament, the different matchups you get and teams you haven't seen and how you adjust to their style of play.
The way that this team has kind of come together, Bob, I don't know if we've talked to you since Zakai Ziegler tore his ACL. I know it's been a little while since we've had you on, at least. The way that the team has kind of come together in the absence of him, making it to the second weekend this way. And again, you know, the offensive struggles that they've had, we understand them, but still trying to gut out these wins and doing well to do so. What have you kind of made of that from your perspective?
Well, I think there was a time where they did have to make the adjustment to Zakai being out. I mean, Zakai brings so much energy to the team, and he's also a guy that that can really guard the ball and put pressure on the other team. And so that's one element that Tennessee lost. So you got to find somebody else to do that. And luckily they have Jemai Meshack, who is a guy that can also do a lot of the things that Ziegler did in terms of pressuring the ball, making sure you can't penetrate. And then Santiago Vescovi, I don't think he gets enough credit for his defense, his long arms, and how hard he has worked on being a good defender. And those two guys basically shut off the driving lane for Duke and never let him because they switch everything out front. So you're never able to get down the lane very often and run your offense. And so I think Meshack and Vescovi have really stepped up since the loss of Ziegler defensively. And I think the whole team has, actually. They were a good defensive team when Zakai was there. I think they're a little bit even better because I think they're even playing harder, if that's possible, on defense with the loss of Ziegler. And everybody knows they got to pick up that slack, and that was kind of the wake-up call for everybody because I think they're all playing tremendous defense. And their help side defense is so good. And the way Adu protects the rim and blocks shots, and their help side defense is as good as any defensive team I've seen at Tennessee for sure, and maybe around the country, because nothing's easy. I mean, you do not get very many easy looks, and if you're driving to the basket, you do it at your own risk.
Bob Kessling here with us on 104.5 The Zone. He'll be on the call tonight, of course. Tennessee taking on Florida Atlantic in the Sweet 16, 7:30 pregame here on 104.5 The Zone is when the Vol Network coverage gets started. Bob, with a win tonight, I mean, Rick Barnes puts himself into a particular place in Tennessee basketball history with the amount of success that he's been able to have with this program. You have better historical context than Lucas and I, even though Lucas probably could name damn near every Tennessee basketball result in his entire lifetime. Kind of where would this put Rick Barnes if they're able to get it done tonight in a big spot?
Well, Tennessee has only been to the Elite Eight once in the history of the program. So if Rick Barnes and the team wins tonight, that puts them in a very special class among Tennessee basketball teams. If they would then win in the Elite Eight, they'd become the first Tennessee team ever to go to the Final Four. So you're talking about making some history with this basketball team. And I think when the season began, I think everybody thought this team could make a run in the NCAA tournament. And now you're in it, and now there's a pretty clear path to get there. So, Coach Barnes is only in his 36 years, or previous 35 years, has only taken one team to the Final Four, and that was when he was at Texas. So this would be a milestone for him as well. So anytime getting to the Final Four, it's just so hard to do that you got to try and take advantage of those opportunities because you don't get many of them. You don't get many chances to get there, and this is maybe Tennessee's best chance in years to make it to the Final Four. So that's not lost on these players, and it's not lost certainly on Coach Barnes. And when he took the job at Tennessee, one of his goals was to rebuild the program and get it back among the elite in the country. He's certainly done that. But getting this far, you want to take those extra steps and get to the Elite Eight, then on to the Final Four, and that would be something that a Tennessee team has never done.
Bob, I mean, obviously you're working very hard this time of year, but with all the incredible results that take place in the NCAA tournament, has there been any that you've been able to enjoy? How like any of the upsets? Have you seen anything that's kind of surprised you or shocked you about the way that this tournament has played out?
Well, I think the Fairleigh Dickinson story, because they're right up here, just up the road from where we are in New York. That's one of the great stories. I mean, anytime you have a 16 knocking off a one, but the fact they had to win a game in Dayton to have a chance to do that. And then the thing is that Farley Dickinson doesn't even have a pep band. So they borrowed the University of Dayton pep band when they were playing, because Dayton turned down an opportunity to go to the NIT, so their pep band was available. So they played the games in Dayton, the first four for Farley Dickinson. Then they just went down the road to Columbus and played for him in Columbus. They wore Dayton hats and Fairleigh Dickinson T-shirts.
I love that.
And they were playing for him. And they played with him in both games in Columbus. And we're going to come up here if Fairleigh Dickinson beat Florida Atlantic. So I thought that's really a great story. But I think the how Purdue lost, that was amazing. And I was really surprised Arizona lost. Anytime a number one seed goes down before the Sweet 16, it's kind of a shock. But the way those teams lost, it was pretty amazing.
One of the upsets, just since we have a play-by-play professional around here, and Lucas and I are, you know, lacking professionalism just generally, did you see the Kevin Harlan call, the video that they put out after he called the Furman upset?
Yes, I did. I did.
I want to play it for the audience, if you don't mind, and then I want to get Bob Kessling's professional assessment, if that's okay with you.
Okay, sure.
Let's hear it.
Four guards out there, along with Cedric, are the best free throw shooter. Clark on a straight track. He threw it away. He threw it away. Young, but this. Timeout, Virginia. Did we just see what we think we just saw?
The way that he knows to hold that microphone closer to his mouth, because you can barely hear him anyway, Bob. Like, it's just such a fantastic moment. I know people in your profession have to really appreciate stuff like that.
Kevin is not only is he one of the best announcers out there, he's one of the nicest guys that you would want to meet. We were sitting, our position was right next to where the CBS guys were, so we had a chance to talk to Kevin a lot during the time we were in Orlando. But yeah, Kevin he's as good as there is. I mean, I think really enjoys calls, and he brings a lot of enthusiasm to him, that's for sure. But Kevin's really good. That was a good call.
Bob Kessling, voice of the Vols, the best in the business. He'll be on the call tonight, of course. Tennessee taking on FAU, the Sweet 16, with the opportunity to go to the Elite Eight for only the second time in the program's history. Bob, thanks so much for taking time on game day. I know you're busy, man. It's always good to chat.
Okay, guys. Always good to talk to you. Thanks. Talk to you soon.
Bob Kessling there with us. Hopefully we get to talk to Bob again if the season continues on this way. So when you look at the matchup, right, it's a much better offense, FAU, on paper. But coming into this, as Lucas kind of, I think, brought up earlier, how this breaks down, and Bob kind of described them as a smaller Alabama. Tennessee is the most efficient defensive team in the country, and you've seen that on full display so far this tournament. So how FAU can kind of combat that, and whether the style of play that they have lends itself to it. I mean, is there a game or a matchup in this Sweet 16 that has a bigger opportunity to be decided by the way it's officiated?
No, definitely not.
Right? Is that's the way, that's the vibe that I kind of get. And that's the sense that I think we all have, right? It's been such a big talking point. Lucas, I think you sent to the group text the clip from the FAU player talking about Tennessee, and we also have some Jay Billis audio that we'll play for you here in just a second. But you know, they've kind of been doing well to set the table to make sure that the officials are on high alert for Tennessee's, shall we call it, physical style of play.
Yeah, Vladislav Golden, the seven-footer. Where outside of Golden, FAU doesn't have a lot of size on the roster. Yep. Most of it comes from him, which means that beating and banging down low, a lot of it's going to be up against this guy.
They can play dirty sometimes, is what I've seen. So we just have to stay focused and play through everything and don't like pay attention on any outside factors.
They can play dirty from what I've seen. Uh-oh, Yurosh.
Now, for what it's worth, other FAU players, you know, talking about Tennessee, we're talking about, yeah, they're physical. They don't take cheap shots. Like, that was the only... That was the only
sure, we found
time
the
word dirty. Yeah, we found the one guy that called him dirty.
One of you. Which one of you is going to say the thing that we all need to gravitate around?
Yeah.
But, I mean, this is not like... It has the opportunity to influence the result. And that's fine. That's a part of the gamesmanship around this stuff. Like, I don't think Jay Billis is intentionally trying. He may be a little bitter about the way that Duke lost. I don't really think Jay's a homer like that.
Never found him to be a big homer.
At all, honestly. So, like, when Tennessee fans got a little bent out of shape about this clip from the Colin Cowherd podcast, I thought it was a tad dramatic. But understanding that Jay has a certain kind of tone that doesn't necessarily lend itself to people being diplomatic after their team's just lost.
The game is way more physical now. I mean, it's ridiculous on cuts. That Tennessee Duke game that you're referencing, that was not a basketball game. That was a hockey game, and it was officiated like a hockey game. There were fouls that were flagrant fouls that were not called flagrant. And I can't understand why. I've talked to several officials about it, and all of them seem to agree that should not have happened that way. But we're seeing that more and more, that the game has become more physical. And when I say physical, I'm not talking about physical on blockouts. Like when I was playing back in the 80s, you know, people thought about the Big East. Oh, the Big East is so physical. And it was less physical than this now. The difference is they didn't have flagrant fouls back then. So when you fouled somebody, you put them in the wood and then a fight started. Now, if you do that, you get tossed out of the game. And now a foul that would have been a normal subway push back in the 80s is called a flagrant more often. We've cleaned a lot of that stuff up, but the general contact now on drives, on screening, on cuts is way more than it used to be. Those would have been fouls in a heartbeat back in the 80s and 90s, and now they're called incidental contact.
Okay, so that's Jay Billis on the Colin Cowherd podcast, and he's only using Tennessee Duke as an example because he was asked about it. Like, Jay didn't offer that up and start his complaining. And honestly, I don't think they're complaints. I think what he's just dissected there is accurate. Like, those should have been, those are probably, I mean, Euros probably should have been called for a flagrant.
Okay, where do you think there should have been a flagrant?
When he elbowed the player into the
Filipowski.
Yes. I think that's probably a flagrant under most circumstances. Do you not think under most circumstances that's called a flagrant?
I guess, yeah, that's the only example from that game that I think you could make an argument. Because I think the foul where he very aggressively boxed out Filipowski, I don't think is a flagrant. I mean,
I think it's a foul.
It's absolutely should have been called a foul.
It's a foul.
Like, Filipowski sold it and flopped, but whatever. It's a foul. It doesn't matter.
Like, it's a foul. I'm saying if you had that result 10 times, how many times would it be called a foul? I would say probably 9 times out of 10.
Also, if you're playing Tennessee and you're not selling it and flopping, you're doing a bad job.
Oh,
so
sure.
I'm tired of seeing all the complaining about players, like, you know, selling these this contact,
to get like the call.
Yeah,
like, why would you not try to use every? I've never understood. I mean,
not
like,
to mention Santiago Vescovi. Santiago Vescovi is an expert at this.
Yes,
an expert at slamming, at break checking guys, at drawing those fouls by selling the contact. So, Tennessee fans, let's not get out here and whine every time somebody flops. That's what's going to happen. That's just being smart. But I could see an argument for the elbow on Filipowski, but I don't see the argument on that box out by Urosh. I don't see the argument on the sequence where Vescovi kind of whipped the ball around in front of his body and it caught, was it Roach on the nose? That, you know, it's just physical basketball, and no SEC coach has uttered a complaint about this all season long. And John Shire didn't complain about it. John Shire was very complimentary about Tennessee.
It was everybody
after the
game. Else carrying on discussion around the Duke loss about the style of play that Tennessee brought to the table. Do you know why? Because John Shire watched Tennessee leading up to that matchup and said, oh, this is a super physical basketball team. Turns out, shocking to no one, Rick Barnes coaches physical basketball teams.
And this 7-footer for FAU, you think he got like a sit down from Dusty May? Like, all right, bud. Like, this is the one. This is the game. It's all coming down to you.
Here it comes, big fella.
Yeah, you're gonna take some shots here. You're the only 7-footer we got. So just brace yourself.
Head on a swivel, kids. 615-737-1045. I think it's a question, and we're going to have a larger discussion around this, about Rick Barnes specifically. What getting the Tennessee Volunteers to the Elite Eight for only the second time in program history would mean for his legacy at the University of Tennessee. I think it would be huge. Nobody would dispute this. But I don't know. I mean, I'm generally curious how Rick Barnes is, from a 1,000-foot view by Vols fans, how they kind of perceive him, right? Because we've had consistent narratives around Rick Barnes, whether it's underachieving in the tournament, whether it's the style of basketball that they bring to the table, Virginia-esque in nature, that does not lend itself always to them having the upper hand, and they can get basically run out of the gym in certain circumstances if their defense falters from its top-notch efficiency that they're able to, I mean, really, year in and year out, bring to the table. It's their best advantage so far. 615-737-1045 is how you join the discussion. Oh, Frying Pan. We haven't heard from Frying Pan in a long time. What's happening, buddy?
Hey, Buck. Thanks for taking my call. I believe the elbow was from Jonas Adu. And to be honest with you, he was just going up for a rebound, and he wasn't, like, trying to clear out Filipowski or whoever that was. It was just, you know, incidental contact. You know, if he was came down with the ball and he was swinging his elbows, I could see it. But to me, that's not a flagrant foul. That's incidental contact. That's a common foul. And, you know, let me ask Jay Billis this. If the shoe was on the other foot, I remember them having a player a couple years ago by the name of Grayson Allen. And that was one of the dirtiest players I've ever seen in college basketball. But, you know, Tennessee plays physical. The SEC is a physical conference. Tennessee's a physical team. ACC is more of a finesse team, finesse conference. But, and then the quick comment about Coach Rick Barnes. I've been as critical on Coach Barnes as anybody. And I'm more than happy to eat some of my crow. Would love some hot sauce on top. But, you know, I had a feeling before the season started this team was capable of making a run of the tournament. And then at times, you know, they had troubles scoring the ball. And I'm excited where they're at and what they've got to play for. But I just want to admit that the frying pan was extremely hard on Coach Rick Barnes. But I'm excited where they're at. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks, buddy. Good to hear from you.
How about that?
Grayson Allen was the definition of dirty.
Where is he right now? He's not on the Bucks anymore.
He's not. He was in Memphis last I saw.
No. He's been a Buck more recently than he's been a Grizzly. Grizzlies got the win, by the way, last night. Opened up with John Morant yesterday.
Grayson Allen is still a Buck.
Still a Buck. Okay. Anyway, I don't remember, Jay. I do remember all the conversations around Grayson Allen. He was such a...
Well, and those highlights were creeping back up because with Duke fans complaining about Tennessee.
Oh, sure. Yeah, making the rounds on
like
the internet.
Tripping people from behind, like not even trying to hide it, just swinging his leg out.
I can't imagine that Jay Billis was soft on Grayson Allen during that time there, but I can't remember exactly the commentary. Anyway, let's wish a special happy birthday to a Titans wide receiver coming up next. We're going to talk about what the hell the Titans need to get Treylon Burks for his 23rd birthday, because this man... He has been put in a very difficult position, so they need to give him some help. We're going to talk about that coming up next.
Searching HVAC near here.
Right here, ma'am. How can we help?
Wow, nobody local? Huh.
Wait, what? We are an HVAC company literally in your neighborhood. Why is she not seeing us?
Just all the big chains. Well, it is what it is.
What in the... Can you not see us?
Nope, they can't see you. Because you're buried deep in the list of local HVAC providers, you are invisible online. Introducing Cumulus Boost. Get a boost, get found, get on the map. Learn more at cumulusboost.com.
the Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band, and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.
So we interrupt your Sweet 16 coverage just for a brief moment. We got a birthday to celebrate. Go ahead and give it to me, Lucas. A very happy 23rd birthday to Titans wide receiver, Treylon Burks.
Happy birthday to him. I don't care. Good luck.
What do you want to get him for his birthday? What should the Titans get Treylon Burks for his 23rd birthday? I have a variety of different suggestions. People have already, before we even ask this question, people in the Zone TV chat have started to participate. You can as well by phone if you would like. 615-737-1045. TUD on YouTube says my B-Day present for Treylon is an inhaler and allergy medicine. Happy birthday. Now that seems a bit unfair. At what point did we stop talking about the inhaler? Do you know that that took up an entire summer of our coverage? That damn inhaler with that wide receiver.
Do not sit here and complain to me about having to talk about inhaler when you're the one that chose to read that comment.
Well, yeah, because it's the only one that offered birthday present submissions before we asked for them.
Just saying.
It was there for me.
You do this. Where you bring something up out of, you know, kind of just pick it up out of the blue and say, oh, I hate that we have to talk about this.
I asked you a question. You didn't respond. You know who responded? TUD, who said an inhaler and allergy medicine. All right, you got a better submission? Bleep you.
We'll put it to a poll.
Okay. Go ahead. At Buck Rising, what should Treylon Burks want from the Titans for his 23rd birthday? I think that's the better way to phrase this. He should want a damn running mate. Somebody who's competent. Veteran wide receiver help is few and far between. Now, there are some affordable options. We had a caller call in yesterday, I think right before Mike Sando joined us, submitting a couple of names, veteran names that are out there. I think Richie James, former MTSU wide receiver, and formerly of the 49ers at this point, looks like he's an unrestricted free agent for the time being. That is a wide receiver who has some value in an offense that's similar to yours. Rand Carthon is familiar, and also brings returner ability. What did Mike Vrabel say jokingly at Rand Carthon's introductory press conference?
Get some returners who don't drop the ball.
Hey, Rand. Hey, bud. Why don't you go get some returners that don't drop the football? When he was asked about, you know, firing Craig Aukerman or something, I think that was the effect of the question. The special teams coordinator. Now, that's not... By the way, that's not an insignificant thing, given that Kyle Phillips can't help but drop the football when he's back there to return it. So you say that tongue-in-cheek a little bit there, Mike, but you could probably use some help that way. Now, they very well could still add veteran wide receiver help. I don't think they're done by any stretch of the imagination, but I think we're done with, like, the bulk first wave of Titans free agency at this point. Six players is a decent-sized, like, first haul. Now, I think they may add a piece here or there, and you may see some additional names floated around once we get closer to camp time and things like that, OTAs and the like. But I would like them to get Treylon Burks, a proven commodity, as a running mate if we're going to take them seriously as an offense this year.
Well, what's more likely, that they find that proven commodity in free agency, or his running mate is not a proven commodity at all and it's a drafted rookie?
I think there should be both. Like,
sure,
both things should
certainly
be so. But I'm not taking both of those answers.
But at this point, it feels like Treylon Burks is wide receiver one for the Titans.
Hey, you want to get him a rookie? I'm getting him a vet. What are you? This is my birthday present. Back off.
I'm asking you what's more likely.
I understand.
Because proven commodities are far and few between at this point.
No, I get that. And by the way, like, people would say, well, why aren't the Titans trading for Elijah Moore? Because apparently he was available from the Jets. And I don't know what's going to happen with Corey Davis now in New York, but that everything seems kind of up in the air because Alan Lazard and Corey Davis would seem to me to be a bit of a redundancy. Now, with Elijah Moore, like, Elijah Moore's not a proven commodity. I thought that was going to be a good wide receiver coming out of Ole Miss.
There's a lot of talk about, I mean, he was being mocked to the Titans a lot in that draft.
He made a lot of sense. Remember A.J. Brown publicly lobbying for him? Understandably so. They were close. I think they still are. But I'm talking about something I know can be there, down in, down out, that can be trusted by a quarterback and a coaching staff. And to me right now, that's not Elijah Moore. Because he was not a happy camper. Did they draft him in the same draft as Zach Wilson? Was he a second-round pick to Zach Wilson's first? Jets might have had multiple first-round picks in that draft. First. I can't remember. They've been bad for a very long time. But I want to say that Elijah Moore and Zach Wilson came in the same draft.
He was a second-round pick. He was the second pick in the second round.
So, but the same draft.
Same draft.
So I'm sure the Jets looked at that and said, okay, we got a quarterback, we got a wide receiver, this is going to work. Yeah. And by the way, like, I think Elijah Moore, traits-wise, is a more complete wide receiver than Mecole Hardman is. So they've just shipped off Moore to the Browns to pair him with Amari Cooper. That seems interesting. And they have signed Mecole Hardman to a one-year reported $6 million deal. And again, people, I think, would look around and say, and we're going to talk a little bit about this in just a second, but what the hell?
What was the phrasing you just used? An experienced, a veteran guy that you know will be there down in and down out?
Yeah, it's not Mecole Hardman either.
And can you find any of those guys on this list of free agents?
Why don't we talk about that coming up next?
Named one of the best personal finance podcasts, The Stacking Benjamin Show with Joe and his friends makes financial literacy fun.
Work hard and save your money. That way, when you're old like me, you can buy the things that only young people can enjoy.
Squirrel watching.
You heard it here first. Get yourself a squirrel cam. Spend $30 a month on nuts, and you'll be at early retirement before you know it.
No, Piggy, this is the road to a podcast nobody listens to.
Find out more by searching The Stacking Benjamin's podcast wherever you listen.